Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. He's been keeping an eye on Capitol Hill's significant budget action this past week. Also, a number of races for the U.S. Senate and House are heating up. We're going to cover all of that with Scott Parkinson. Scott, good to have you here.
It's great to be back, Loman. Thank you.
Let's start out. The federal budget, Scott, due by October 1st, never actually happens. There's this thing called a continuing resolution. Do we have one? What are the details?
Well, you remember last week, Speaker Johnson tried to pass a bill that was a six-month continuing resolution that would have avoided the lame duck session of Congress, and it also included a bill called the SAVE Act, which would have prevented illegal aliens from voting in federal elections. Unfortunately, that bill couldn't pass with just Republican votes. All the Democrats voted it down, and instead, Speaker Johnson had to kind of go back to the drawing board. This week, he announced that he was going to do just a three-month continuing resolution that was a so-called clean bill. The problem with this bill is that it expires on December 20th, and that creates this pressure during the lame duck to pass an omnibus appropriations bill to tack on all these different anomalies, whether it's supplemental funding for the VA, emergency supplemental funding for disaster relief. Could also see the farm bill getting attached there, different tax extenders, various provisions that are funneling and fueling K Street special interests. It's the problem because there's not accountability for these members that are voting for it at the end of the Congress, some of which are retiring, some of which have lost their election. So conservatives wanted to try to avoid the lame duck session to prevent the Democrats from taking control of the negotiations and hopefully putting things into the Trump administration's power to do policies that we all want to see accomplish. This week, the House of Representatives went ahead, pulled up the bill underneath what's known as a suspension of the rules, so it required a two-third majority to pass rather than just a simple majority, and 82 Republicans voted against it. Every single Democrat voted yes, along with roughly 130 House Republicans. And unfortunately, that bill passed the U.S. House of Representatives, went over to the Senate. They had a couple of amendment votes, and ultimately, only 18 U.S. senators voted against the bill. That's something that Biden's going to be signing into law before the fiscal year, and we will be facing a funding fight once again on December 20th. I think that it's unfortunate because you're basically rolling the dice if Trump wins. Right. There's a chance that they'll do some of the anomalies, but they'll say, well, you guys won the power and go ahead and kick it to the March. But if Trump loses, then you're going to be dealing with all the extra things that the Democrats want to adjudicate and sort of clean the barn out for Kamala Harris and her administration if she is successful in November. I obviously think we've got a good chance at winning the presidential election, but I can never really trust the uniparty in Washington, D.C. to do things in the best interest of the American people when it comes to federal funding. These omnibus appropriation bills, the continuing resolutions, have resulted in a funding system that has no fiscal restraint and ultimately, I think, is pouring gasoline on the fire of a burning economy that, you know, is really, really struggling at this time.
Well, that can has been kicked down the road, so we'll take up the conversation again in December, Scott. Let's switch now to politics. The map for the U.S. Senate very much favors Republicans this year, but two states, Texas and Florida, which we normally would assume would be just solidly in the Republican column, they're starting to become a little bit more of a battleground. What do you see happening in Texas and Florida?
Yeah, so the Democrat Senatorial Committee has long focused on two incumbent Republicans as their best pickup opportunities and chances to flip seats, right? So like on the other side of the coin, Republicans always knew that West Virginia, Ohio, and Montana were going to be the three best pickup opportunities. We've basically clinched West Virginia with Jim Justice. Things are looking really good for Tim Sheehy against John Tester. He's reportedly up about 7% right now. And Bernie Moreno and Sherrod Brown are in sort of a dogfight in Ohio. That being said, the Democrats are flush with cash, right? They have truckloads of cash. They don't even know where to spend it. So they're going back to the drawing board, expanding their map. And this week they announced big investments in Texas and Florida to try to defeat Ted Cruz in Texas and Rick Scott in the Sunshine State. We still obviously feel like Rick Scott and Ted Cruz are going to win those races. We think that Trump is going to easily win Florida and he's going to easily win Texas. But when you get down to these down ballot races, the Democrats, their candidates, their money, their posturing that they take does create an opportunity. And I think the Democrats are going all in to try to save their majority by picking off either Florida or Texas. Right now, things in Nevada with Sam Brown against Jackie Rosen, and then in Arizona with Carrie Lake against Ruben Gallego. Those are a couple of coin flip races as well. They're going to, I think, ride on the coattails of Trump winning both of those states. And then in states like Maryland with Larry Hogan hoping to win that race, and Michigan with Mike Rogers against a really well-funded Alyssa Slotkin. Obviously, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is going to be ground zero for the presidential electoral map. There's also a competitive Senate race there with Dave McCormick taking on Bob Casey. There's a lot of options for Republicans to have a good night, but there aren't a lot of options for Democrats. And I think that's why you're seeing them being able to fully fund their incumbents that they want to defend, like Bob Casey and Jackie Rosen. And then they're also like, okay, well, if we're going to lose Montana and West Virginia, what can we do to somehow hold the majority? Oh, we got to win Florida or we got to win Texas. That's why you're seeing these big investments. We still feel confident in both of our Republican senators, Rick Scott and Ted Cruz, but they're going to be races to watch.
One of the races to watch in the House happens to be a seat in Pennsylvania, a bit personal for me because my congressman, Scott Perry, is under siege right now by Democrats. What sort of maneuvering do you see happening in that district? And that district happens to be in South Central Pennsylvania, the capital region of Harrisburg and surrounding counties.
It's one of those districts that has gotten worse through redistricting and the way that the congressional map for Pennsylvania was drawn. That being said, Scott Perry is a resilient candidate. He has proven that he can win close races in the past, and he usually pulls it out by 5 or 8%. I think that that is a congressional district that is one to pay attention to because it will also help determine whether or not Donald Trump can win Pennsylvania. So Scott Perry is a former chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. He's a 39-year veteran of our military. He's a father of two, just a solid conservative. And the Democrats, I think, are unfairly attacking him because he started to ask questions after the 2020 election. And a lot of these things get taken out of context. His phone was seized by the FBI because he took on a leadership role in the conservative movement to really have an investigation. But that's what we want Congress doing. We want oversight on federal elections. We want them to make sure that there's investigations related to fraud and wrongdoing. And even if the investigation has a result that's, you know, there is no fraud or there's no criminal action, it's fine, I think, for members of Congress to do the due diligence. And that's what Scott Perry did. He has been a rock-solid conservative when it comes to his voting record.
Yeah, and that district, really the only one in Pennsylvania where Democrats have even an outside chance, and I still believe it's an outside chance of a pickup, but Republicans have two, maybe three congressional districts where they could make a gains here in Pennsylvania. And as you referenced, Pennsylvania ground zero in the presidential race. We have been talking with Scott Parkinson of the Club for Growth. Scott, a few words about the club.
Well, the club is based out of Washington, D.C., and we're an economic organization focused on freedom, opportunity, and liberty. We also have a political action committee, Club for Growth PAC, and a super PAC called Club for Growth Action, where we endorse candidates and help them win their races through independent expenditures. If you want to learn all about the candidates like Scott Perry that we're supporting in 2024, visit clubforgrowth.org.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, thank you for being here.
You are welcome.